You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I have the double-headed Dream Team edition with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities, both in Johannesburg. Now, Viv, we were chatting just before David joined us about the extraordinary, what is it now, 3 days, 4 days? I don't know, it seems like 3 years, 4 years, about the executive orders that Mr. Trump, with his giant felt-tip pen, signs into law. I mean, it's extraordinary. I mean, apart from the ridiculous 1,500 criminals being pardoned, there's all sorts of things regarding DEI and all sorts of other things. But you've looked deeper into it, not just the headline grabbers, Viv.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Look, I think the biggest thing he's done beyond the, 1,500 people here or there doesn't really make a difference. The U.S. probably gets more than that, you know, guilty people go out in any single week in the U.S., you know what I mean? But the change he did through Lyndon B. Johnson's, anti-discrimination executive order, the U.S. government basically can't discriminate in terms of employment. But the way they phrased it was, you know, you kind of have a disparate impact kind of thing. So, it was Lyndon Johnson and Nixon thereafter, where they basically came up with this thing of disparate impact. So you've seen cases in the last couple of years where, for instance, teachers have sued and won because certain groups of teachers underscored less on tests and therefore were not hired or something because of that. Where firemen, who also managed to sue and win because certain tests had different impacts in different communities. Not only has he removed it, he's removed and replaced it with something new that is basically going to be pretty much the reverse of what the last thing was. And that's going to affect, you know, like I said, if you look at the amount of people whose incomes depend some way or another depend on the U.S. government, or from the state to local level and, you know, to the national level, it approaches half of the U.S. population in terms of workforce. And so this is something that's going to affect all of those people in some way or another.
Yes, it's certainly been sweeping changes. He'd obviously been planning it, and he'd got those lovely folders, and as I said, got his felt tip pens ready to do.
I don't think he was planning it. I don't think he would have known this stuff. I think Trump is going out and looking at 60-year-old, legislative orders from Lyndon B. Johnson. No, I see a guy. Literally, there's a little clip of Vivek Ramaswamy, who's no longer part of DOGE. Literally in a podcast talking to somebody and coming up with this idea. Literally, he wrote it down. Yes, he had the idea in a book and he wrote it down. You can just see him doing it, writing it down. And that is the kind of planning that's coming to here because Trump is not looking at like old orders and thinking, he's thinking change the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. That's what he's thinking. He's not thinking, how could I fundamentally change how the US government works and know which laws to change? That's not Trump.
No, well, we know what Trump is, and David Shapiro is a man after my own heart when it comes to this sort of thing. David, your impression of the first very few days and hours of Trump's latest administration?
What's shaken me is that no one's protested.
Exactly.
No, I haven't seen. I read The Atlantic. I've been reading as much as I can. I enjoy The Atlantic.
Yes.
They're having a go at him, but I haven't seen people storming in the streets and protesting against his change of genders. You know, no more will gender appear on your passport. It's going to be sex, either male or female. Hmm. Simple as that, you know, in any government stories. He's no such thing as DEI in any federal government committee. He's put everybody associated with those committees or those areas of the federal government on leave, on paid leave. He's going to review the whole thing. So, but I thought, where's the outcry? And all they're doing is fawning over him. If you saw the gallery behind him at the inauguration, from Zuckerberg to you name it.
Which I did, yes.
To Bezos and Bezos's new puffed out wife. You know, all those kind of people, no one cares. And you know, all, as you say, as Viv said, these laws have been entrenched since the Lyndon Johnson. A lot of changes have tried to be introduced, you know, to create equality. I mean, it's been an ongoing issue. And in one fell swoop, boop, gone, you know, and no one cares.
No. You know, and talking about the gallery.
Viv, I don't know whether I'm just looking, I'm saying, why is no one protesting? Why aren't there placards? Why aren't there, isn't Washington, isn't there an outcry? And everybody gets on and says, oh, you know what? The S&P's up. We're going to grow. We're going to create job. America first. You know.
We'll see.
You know what I'm saying? Okay.
Mm. Well, talking about the gallery, and obviously the number one in the gallery is Elon Musk. Did you see the close-ups of him? I'm not saying he was on ketamine. I'm not saying he was on ketamine because who do we know? I mean, who are we to say that he was drugged up? But he has a history of drug use. But he was waving his head all over the place, and his eyes are up in the sky.
That is an explanation that apparently, like the week before he announced, he had gone for a neck surgery. So he had surgery on his neck like a week or so before. And that is why that happened. But you see, he wasn't on ketamine. I mean, I did talk to you guys about that in the past, that I think he was. But in this case, it probably had to do with the fact that he announced like a week or two earlier that he had to get the neck surgery done. Speaking of Elon Musk, apparently, remember I told you guys that he's not going to be caring about the government spending and whatnot, and it's going to be changing regulations. That's the bigger thing for him. Apparently, that's why Vivek Ramaswamy was kicked out, because Ramaswamy was going in there trying to do what they were talking about doing, apparently, around, you know, cutting spending and like doing all this kind of stuff. And Musk was much more, you know, focused on cutting regulations and doing things that could help his company. But speaking of which, did you guys see the announcement about the $500
billion? This was my main thrust with you, Aviv, because you've got Oracle, SoftBank, and Chat. And Trump suddenly stands up there at the lectern, as he does, and says, "We're going to be investing $500 billion, in other words, half a trillion US dollars, in this thing." And Musk, who he and Altman hate each other, and they're standing there, and then Musk says, which was, of course, the beginning of the end of their relationship. He says, "No, this is a load of rubbish. They haven't got the money." He says that SoftBank has only got $10 billion secured. So where does the $500 billion come from? But Viv, you know more about this than I do. So please carry on.
Okay, and there's a thing after that. Satya Nadella, who's the head of Microsoft, says, "I don't know about the $500 billion. I know that I'm spending $80 billion per year. Okay, and the $500 billion is not one soft for the entire period. It's going to be over multiple years." So $80 billion per year adds up to like a lot of hundreds of billions very soon. And he says, "I'm good for the $80 billion. You know, I mean, that's a flex, you know what I mean? To say, "I'm good for my $80 billion. I'm able to spend that kind of money." And even Musk has admitted that Satya has the money for this. Afterwards, there's a thing about him saying, "Yes, Satya does have the money." So this is, even though he wasn't on the lectern, it does appear that a large chunk of that bankroll comes from Microsoft. And the second part to it is SoftBank, Masatoshi-san. I don't know if you've ever seen one of his pitch books. It looks like, not to be like weird about it, it looks like a teenage kid's like wish board. You know what I mean? You have pictures of birds and inspiring words underneath. Like, he raised $100 billion from the Saudis. You know. He's made some really good bets, including things like Arm, which has really done well for him. He's made some huge, huge investments in the past that have done really, really well. And so even though he's weird and he does all these things, the big swings he does sometimes do work out. And he could probably get a similar kind of money, if not more, from the Saudis. I mean, they're not going to waste $1 trillion on a line if they could basically...
It's all there already. I don't think there's anything new. I don't know why. Maybe that Oracle's coming in, but Oracle, in their results, they've made it quite clear. Maybe the JV, but in terms of the absolute numbers, I don't think there's anything new in those numbers. And I think this one's been writing in this kind of expansion into data centers, whoever was going to do it.
Yeah.
But I think what scares me, Viv, is that Trump thinks he's doing a deal. He's acting like a business. Yeah, we'll take a bit of this. You know, with the TikTok, yeah, we want to have a share of TikTok as well for government.
Yeah.
I said, what kind of matter?
And who wants to get TikTok? Musk.
Yes.
Apparently, the Chinese government is betting Musk to take over TikTok. And TikTok, as you know, basically, even though it's, you know, not technically Chinese government, it is the Chinese government, and they have to give the approval for this. And so they look at Musk, and if Musk gets TikTok and Twitter...
The interesting thing that Trump said, he said, "I don't know why people are so worried about the Chinese government monitoring some US teenagers watching stupid videos." That's Donald Trump.
we'll see with the Musk thing, right? If Musk is not going to get a bad deal on TikTok because they have no choice. The Chinese government says yes. Trump says yes. He's going to get TikTok at a steal. And TikTok is worth, you know, a fortune. I think it's like $200-300 billion in total. But even if he gets just a piece of the American part, it's going to be worth, you know, 10 or 50, maybe $100 billion. And he's going to get that at a discount. And then he's going to have TikTok along with, you know, Twitter, X. That is a combination that's very powerful.
But Viv, you know what I mean? I saw a very interesting interview with a chap on CNN in the early hours, and he's somebody who's put $20 billion on the table and says, I'll buy the American division of TikTok so the Chinese government can carry on. Mm. And he said that there's 5 billion lines of algorithmic formula, and you're not allowed to use one line of those 5 billion. You're not allowed, and that is what TikTok is all about. Those algorithmic formula. And so they've got to write it all again themselves. So it's not quite as simple as somebody going in and buying it and replicating the current model, Viv.
No, but the thing is that the model itself, the Chinese government wants that model to be in place. That model is extremely addictive. That TikTok is basically has the highest level of addiction, I think, of any of these social media things. But I don't think Musk is out there just for the addictiveness. He's out there for the influence peddling. You know what I mean? It's going to be a YouTube, you know, competitor. It's going to be a Facebook competitor. TikTok plus Twitter together is comparable to, like, you know, Facebook. It's comparable to, you know, YouTube. It's going to make him automatically a big player in that space. And even though he may have overpaid for Twitter, he's not going to overpay for TikTok. And the thing is that it doesn't matter who wants to buy this thing. Even if it's like $20 billion or $50 billion, whatever it is, the Chinese government has to say yes. And the Chinese government says yes to Musk because he has dealings in China already. They know they have him by the proverbial, you know, because of his operations in China, because he has the factories in China. He has the operations in China already. So they know he can't be too against China because of the operations he already has in China. So that's why I think, and also Trump, if Musk wants it, he's not going to say no to Musk. It's an easy thing for him to say yes. Because not only is he going to keep his friend Elon Musk happy, still he needs the money for it to make sure that the Congress and Senate does what he wants, but Musk TikTok is going to be very friendly to Trump.
You know, Viv, I was listening to a chap who impressed me immensely. He was a young fellow by the name of – he's a representative from Massachusetts, fellow by the name of Jake, I think, Oshensloss. I can't pronounce his name, Harvard man. And very articulate, exceptionally well-versed in these issues. And the way that he put it across, because I think he's been on the kind of committees that, you know, the Congress committees and that look at these things. And the way he spoke, this is not a gimme. You know, you can't get this through Congress. There's so many other elements to this. And, you know, he was making the comment. He says, you know, TikTok in China is completely different from TikTok in America, and TikTok in China is educational. TikTok is prying into your personal affairs or your personal life in America. So, but he also, you know, he was highly critical. It's the first, obviously, he's a Democrat in that, but you know, suggesting that this is not going to go through. You know, you're not going to be able just to push these things through. If Trump has been speaking about, oh, well, we'll take 40%, you're going to get, you know, it's got to go through a process.
Yes.
It's not like you can't, you know, Trump can't decide, okay, I'm going to give it to my mates.
No, Trump won't be able to do it himself, but Elon Musk and his guys will have the ability to make sure that this is structured in such a way that it, remember, there's a law in place at the moment, and it has to be sold, right? And he'll be able to – that's the thing. This current Trump administration is not the same as the last one because now he has people in there that are much more competent. Say what you want about Musk. Say what you want about, you know, the kind of people he has in place right now. They are not, you know, amateurs. They know what they're doing. And if Musk wants to get TikTok, he will make sure he gets it in, you know, by whatever shareholdership or whatever needs to be done to make sure that he controls it. And the thing is that, again, like you're saying, okay, what's good or what's bad for the country? What's good or what's bad for the politician matters more, I think. Mm. And Republicans are going to love the fact that suddenly TikTok is controlled by a Republican. You know what I mean? Mm. And that, I think, is why it go through, not because they are looking at, oh, it's bad for people or it's not going to give them the right thing. But one more thing before you stop on Trump, you've got to mention this, that meme coin. Did you see that thing?
Yes.
No.
I've got a lovely story for you. Go.
Okay. Trump launched his meme coin, okay?
Oh, yes. And also Melania's got one as well.
I think that was an overstep. It actually caused the Trump coin to fall. Okay. But Trump launches the meme coin and it becomes, because he holds 80% of the thing and it just rockets up after no time. I think it was at one point in time worth 80% of his total net worth. So all the other stuff he had was worth basically nothing. This was worth 80% of his total net worth. Okay. And, the thing that's interesting here is that, if you look at what people are saying about it, and David has mentioned the fact that, we are seeing, people coming around and talking about, Congress, whatever. This, as well as the pardoning, where a week or two ago, even J.D. Vance was saying, we'll pardon people, but we won't pardon people that commit violence. Yes. Even the people in Congress saying, we won't pardon people. He pardoned everybody. It was like a blanket pardon. Okay. The Republicans will bend to his will on this thing. You're already seeing that happen with people like Pete Hedzik and so on going through, likely to go through. We're already seeing that happen with the stuff that's already gone through the executive orders. The kind of stuff happening around TikTok, I would not be surprised if Musk or someone like Gary Ellison or one of his new friends that were behind him in that stage get a hold of TikTok at a discount. And not because it's just about, protecting South American interests. It's because TikTok is now going to be, like Twitter is, a far more right-leaning thing because Trump's in power and it has to be like right-leaning to make him happy.
Okay, everybody, it's scary. The whole thing is scary, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not analysing it as Viv has and you have, David, but I watch it religiously and I just read the room. I read Trump. It is extremely disturbing and to a certain extent distressing what has happened. And it's only day three, for goodness sake.
It's only been 3 days, 4 days. But he's talking a little later.
Devils.
Yeah. Lindsay, I just, and Viv, my son, who's a journalist in the in Australia. He's with the Sydney, not with the Sydney, with the Financial Review, the Australian Financial Review, the AFR. They wrote a story about a meme coin or a meme, whatever you call it. And he launched one called Johnny Coin, with the newspaper. Within a few minutes, it had run up to $6 million. $6 million and came back, to a value now of around about $100,000. As a joke, this was an article. But he says it was launched in so many different countries and so many different languages. It's insane. So,
the guy that runs Ethereum is called Vitalik, right? And he basically is considered to be like the genius, in inverted commas, of crypto. And he complains about the fact that every time somebody launches a one of these meme currencies, what they do is they give him a whole chunk of it, trying to associate themselves with him. So, like every so often, he gets like a message saying somebody's effectively giving you like a couple of tens of billions of dollars, right? Sure. Because just the association with him, right, means that the meme coin has some credibility and therefore it is worth like billions of dollars. And he complains about the fact that people are scabbing people by giving him billions of dollars.
Anyway, that's the world.
It's the meme coin. I still don't know what it is. And you can say as much as you like, Viv, about it being 80% of Donald Trump's wealth, but he can't redeem it. And next week it'll be 20% of his wealth because it's collapsed. There's no way you can go out there and say.
This term they use is called rug pulling, right? So what they do is that you release it into the public, you hold your assets behind, and what happens is then you start selling at some prescribed time. And I think he started selling. If you look back at that thing, okay, the share price basically halved in like a couple of seconds a few days ago. That was probably him selling a whole bunch of it into the market. Mm-hmm. He's gotten out probably millions, maybe even hundreds of millions of dollars out of this thing already. And you think, okay, it can't be true, but there's people that put real money into it at 70, and now it's about 40, okay? Mm-hmm. But and if the kind of movements you see here, these big drops are from 70 to 40 in a couple of minutes here, that is basically some big seller selling into it, and that's probably him.
Anyway. It's a scam, in other words. It's a Ponzi scheme.
This is called rug pulling. This is a total scam. But he's done this. Right? And like I said, it cost him zero to create it. It literally, you can create it like David's son created for nothing. And he's made probably, like I said, if not tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, maybe even $1 billion+ off this thing, possible, but at least tens of millions of dollars on this thing.
Sickening. Easily. It's sickening. I'm sorry.
Well, I have no idea what either of you are talking about. I don't know what a meme coin is, David. I honestly have no idea what it is.
And Melania has got a meme.
It just worries me. You know, the whole thing is so concerning. I think more concerning than the people sitting in the White House, you know, and their antics and what they're up to, and where this is leading. It's quite scary. So I just watch the market, Lindsay.
Yes, we're talking about that. Shares are up today.
Shares are down. Yeah.
No, talking about that. Let me go through it, because you've got to talk about your Business Day article, because these are things I understand. I understand that one US dollar buys you 18.56 South African rands. Okay, that is easy for me to understand. The British pound against the rand is 22.86, and the euro rand is 19.30. The euro dollar is 103.95. British pound against the US dollar 123.20. Gold price 27.43, which is up a bit. The platinum is up 13 to 960. Palladium has gone into four figures again, 1,014, which is up $13.50. Other commodities, I don't know what Drill Baby Drill is doing for Trump, but the oil price is still quite high, $79.54, which is up 0.75%. That's Brent crude. And West Texas crude is $75.87, which is up 0.6%. Natural gas price is up 2% to $4.04. That's quite a move. And what else have we got here? Nothing really, but S&P 500 futures. The high on the futures, all-time high, 6178. Currently 6,116. US 10-year Treasury bond yield, still up there, 4.65%. And the South African 10-year is 9.25%. Bitcoin, been speaking about memes and coins and stuff, I just don't know. 104,000 and a small amount of change, down very slightly. And that's about it. David, you wrote an article in Business Day, which you posted on LinkedIn. It was more or less what you were telling me on Monday. Yeah. But just sort of go through it for Viv's benefit, if you would.
What? This is, there's half-truths in what I wrote. I mean, when I say half-truths, I wrote it like a novelist. I mean, you know, the characters coming back from holiday, which is true. People did get hold of me complaining about, you know, why or we haven't kept up with the S&P. Oh, yeah. Why last year they underperformed. And this happens, you know, and I always say every December, I love it because people go to the beach and every man, and his dog. Well, I used the Stanley Cup, you know, because everybody now walks around with that Stanley Cup. Do you know what those are, Lindsay?
No.
You know, everybody goes to gym with this Stanley Cup, which is quite an expensive quencher that keeps your water cold, you know, and that's the thing you walk around with drinking or sipping out of this. So they all come back from their holidays and discussing the market with their friends on the beach. And I always say, not one of my clients, you know, every one of my clients has got a friend that did better than him. Yeah. That's it.
Of course.
Why? Yeah, why? So, which is true. And so the whole thing is that what it's all about is NVIDIA. You either had NVIDIA or not NVIDIA, you know. And also the risks that I try to highlight is that last year the S&P, which was up 23%, really driven by seven stocks or eight stocks, whatever it was, take those away, the S&P was up 12 or 13%. So I think from any kind of risk approach, you know, if you're managing a portfolio, you would never have put all your stocks or, you know, all the money in a handful of stocks, unless you're taking high risk. Now, you can take high risk for yourself, but you can't do it if you're running a pension fund or provident fund. You have to have a certain, you've got to do risk analysis. And you've also got to be a lot more careful about what you do with people's money, especially savings money. So that's what I was trying to compare and saying, yes, you know, we're going into this year. It's going to be a pretty decent year, I think, as well. But you can't carry on waiting in tech shares, because what history has taught us is that things can go wrong and do go wrong. We've seen it throughout the history of the stock market, and that's particularly in technology. And if you look back and Vivian, you will remember IBM's computers, which were replaced, or IBM's systems were replaced by Microsoft, you know, Windows 95 and so on, or Windows and then 95 and so on. Intel, Cisco, all of those things change. And therefore, you've got to remain very vigilant, very agile if you're going to go into the tech market. And we've got so many developments. You heard, you know, you've listened to a lot to what Viv has to say. And he highlights, you know, just how things are, you know, how different things are and how difficult things are. So that's my message. Yes, I'm a tech freak. I love tech, but you've got to remain, you've got to have your feet on the ground. So, but the whole thing of this, sorry to keep going on, but
that's right.
You know, with NVIDIA, what I also try to highlight, and during 22, you know, post COVID with NVIDIA, that was a time that, they had built up huge stocks for, because of blockchain and huge stocks because of gaming. When people were stuck at home, there was a lot of computer buying and so on. And they were stuck with a lot of excess stock. Or certainly through their supply channels, no one was buying because they were stuck with stock. So NVIDIA, which had gone up 450% over a few years, dropped 60%. Now, it doesn't mean 450 minus 60.
No.
It's 60% of that 450, you know. So it came down crashing, and everybody, all the clients that we had put NVIDIA, them in, you know, put them into NVIDIA kept saying, why we got NVIDIA? Why you got NVIDIA, you know? And then a year later, when ChatGPT was launched and it became one of the hot stocks, everybody comes back to us and saying, why aren't we NVIDIA?
When you lose money, David, it's your fault. When you make money and they're at a briar on the beach, it was all to do with them. We know that. Now, here's a quote for you, Viv. I'm not worried about our relations. I spoke to him soon after he was elected, congratulated him, and we both said we are looking forward to continued dealings and engagements. And that was on the fringe of the World Economic Forum in Davos when this particular person was on the phone. From whom was that quote?
Probably someone at Keir Starmer or...
No. It's your man. It's Cyril Ramaphosa. And when I can just see Trump putting the phone down and saying, who's this guy? He's from one of those S-hole countries in Africa or something. I can't see Trump ever visiting Africa. I can't see Trump picking up the phone to Ramaphosa and saying, yeah, you really are very, very important because you've got PGMs and everything and we need them. I just don't see it happening. It's just, it's a lot of nonsense. But anyway, I'm being pessimistic.
Ramaphosa might have a better idea with Trump because I think people now know how to handle Trump, which is just basically flatter him, you know, outrageously. And I think Ramaphosa understands that. And here's the thing about Africa. You know, I think Biden was the first president in I don't know how many decades, U.S. president, to visit Africa. And he did it like in his last month of presidency.
He went to Angola, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because like, we don't even appear on the radar of these guys, unfortunately. Nah. But yeah, I do worry about, like you said, like the craziness of Trump, but I do think that now people know what to do. And unfortunately, what they know how to do is how to flatter him and give it to whatever he wants to. And that is not exactly the recipe for a great future for the country or for the world.
I worry more about it. You know, in fact, there was a good article by Peter Bruce this morning just highlighting the worry is not is more Rubio than Trump. Rubio, who's the foreign secretary now, is an extremely aware man and, you know, very, very pro-Israel, whether you like it or not. You know, those are his sentiments that he's expressed. And I don't think we've exactly endeared ourselves in that area, so South Africa. And the other point he made up was that, you know, he raised Peter Bruce raised that whole issue round about the, you know, the ship in Simonstown. Loading, and that's never been explained properly. So, the point is that South Africa doesn't exist. And Trump, if he takes this attitude towards his allies, can you imagine what he's going to take towards Africa? You know, his whole point. I just, sorry to go on. I heard him about Canada, and he kept saying, "Why do we need Canada? Why do we need their cars? Why do we need their milk?"
Yes, milk. You mentioned milk.
Yeah. You know, and he was saying, we don't need it.
All their forests. He also said the forests. He said, we've got beautiful forests. We don't need their timber. So, he's a nutter.
So, totally. But, I mean, you've got to sit in front of him, and he's not scared to bring up these things. You know, he's not there for the photo shoot.
Okay, let's get back to reality now. This is all like Alice in Wonderland stuff. On the upside on the JSE today, British American Tobacco was a 1.6% winner. One of David's favourites, Richemont, up 1.4%. Sibanye-Stillwater managed just over 1% gain. And Resilient, the property company, up 1.1% as well. Downside, I don't know how many of these ex-div. One I want to highlight is Sasol, down 4.2%. Outsurance down 3.8%.
It was a bad, what's the name? A bad
trading update, yeah. Yeah, I don't know how, with the oil price at $80 a barrel for Brent crude and the Rand still relatively weak, how Sasol can continue to be. It's an 87 Rand share, for goodness sake. David, please give us the closing JSE indices and the value traded.
We've gone into negative territory now. You know, so the all share index right across the board down, and quite severe losses. The all share index was down 0.84% at 83,944. So that makes us negative for the year. All the major indices were down. Resources down 1.09%, just spread evenly amongst all the miners. Yeah, banks as well under a bit of pressure, down 1.6%. And the consumer and industrials also down slightly. And they were helped up by British American Tobacco, Richemont, and so on. But those are not, you know, those are not local stocks. Lindsay, just to give what we are seeing now, certainly what we're picking up, and it's evident again, there's been quite a big sell-off in retailers.
Okay.
You know, we had Quick's results, Mr. Price results, yet there's just this persistent selling of retail. It's after last year where we had very good gains there. I think the reality is biting and either profit taking or looking elsewhere for gains.
Mm. Okay, value traded. What was it? Did you say?
About just under 20 billion. I'll give you the exact numbers. Yeah, around about 18, 19 billion.
Okay.
And for the second day in a row, First Rand has been the top trader, outpacing Naspers. Naspers still there, but quite a bit of interest in First Rand and Capitec, another one that has been among the high traders over the last few days.
Okay, very good. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time as always. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss and David Shapiro from Sasson Securities. That was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.